Hello, friends. Welcome to episode 77 of the Alabama Liberal Podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about the Pricktatorship, modern masculinity, gender drain, MSNBC versus Fox News, destination abortions, pretty privilege, and so much more. As you can tell, we have a jam-packed episode full of a lot of different topics. Most of the stuff I've never talked about in the Alabama Liberal Podcast. Some of it's been in YouTube videos, so if you don't check out Alabama Liberal's YouTube channel, make sure you go check that out. I have literally probably close to 200 videos by now. They all center around this idea of gender. Some people may call it toxic masculinity. Some people may call it misogyny. I'm still not sure quite exactly what the difference is. I think toxic masculinity is, I guess you could kind of say Trump, where it's like there's an ego and there's a machismo and there's a boasting and almost like aggression and strict gender roles in terms of like that's sissy and that's not, and an idea of what a man should be that is basically not good for people. I don't think it's good for society to embrace. And I don't think it's good for the men themselves, and I'm going to kind of explain that. And misogyny is more of a general hatred of women or distrust of them or things like that, which is rampant in the alt-right movement. In the past, I've been skeptical of the Me Too movement. I think a lot of those cases are just celebrity gossip. I don't think that it's really trickled out to like people that work in a meatpacking plant in Alabama. As I've said before, chicken plant workers are still getting sexually harassed just because Rose McGowan wants to make a few million dollars. Like, that still is happening. And I think that the media's had a very myopic interest in itself. Other than the media and to an extent politics, we haven't really seen that trickle out into a lot of different avenues and fields. And some people would say, no, there's tech. And I'm like, yeah, but you're still getting into the very well-known, very public, visible sexual harassment in industries that people care about. And there's a lot of stuff kind of hidden in the back that you're not seeing. Even though I might have had suspicions for it, there's a certain kind of man, it's Joe Rogan and it's Jordan Peterson, that they just go on and on about cancel culture and the Me Too movement and feminazis, and they are misogynistic. I still think that you kind of are what you hate to a certain extent. As I've used these examples before, like if you're a neo-Nazi, you may have black porno magazines under your bed. Or if you're a Black Panther, you may have a white baby mama across town. You know, Jesse Jackson had an out-of-wedlock kid with a white woman. And then if you are just constantly bashing gays like Ted Haggard, you might really be gay. Sure, Fred Phelps, you know, now that he's in the ground, that we might find a diary where he was secretly gay all these years and he just couldn't handle it. The 9/11 hijack. The night before they flew the planes in, they went to a strip club. They had huge-breasted, implanted, blonde American strippers in their face and loved every minute of it. I think they couldn't handle that. They liked it and they had to kill it. Some people said the Columbine shooters might have had a homoerotic relationship that they couldn't deal with. The Pulse nightclub shooter that shot up the gay nightclub probably almost certainly was gay and couldn't deal with it and had to destroy it because he couldn't deal with it. So I do think to an extent, people kind of are what they hate. I think most of the criticisms that Donald Trump says about Biden, mental decline and he's not being transparent about his health and his kid's a screw up who's had to depend on him for their jobs, I think you could easily project that back onto Trump, that he knows probably deep down is wrong with him and that's why he keeps putting it out there. So I think generally there's things that drive people crazy, but if you are a man that votes exclusively on backlash to feminism or cancel culture or Me Too or whatever you like to phrase it as, that is almost certainly because you're a misogynist. And it's the same thing for the people that overly react to Black Lives Matter and say, Black Lives Matter, I don't like them, and they're always doing they're racist. You could say, as I've said before, I have questions about some of the things that Black Lives Matter has done. I think take a knee is a dumb way to protest police brutality. The Me Too movement, a lot of those cases are somewhat dubious, such as Rose McGowan or Aziz Ansari. So I've questioned these movements before, but to have that be the sole thing that you vote on is childish at best, and it shows that really you just hate the issues themselves. Like, you're not against Me Too. You're against sexual harassment movements and women's liberation. You're not against Black Lives Matter. You're a racist. And so I think to have that be the sole thing that defines your votes. And I had a video on Alabama Liberal a couple of years ago called Are Politically Correct Liberals the New Social Conservatives? And it talked about the weird overlap between them and social conservatives. Some PC liberals, they want to ban porn. They don't want to have bikini sections at the beauty pageants. They're very leery of like anything sexual, almost in a weird asexual kind of way. They want to take sex out of society in a way that felt very reminiscent to me of the social conservatives that I grew up with in Alabama. and part of the big reason that drove me into the Democratic Party. I've said the example of social conservatives, they were against having premarital sex and telling girls that they shouldn't have sex, and you know, drinking bans and alcohol bans and sex toy bans, and Alabama doesn't have lottery tickets. And it was everything that was designed to drive a teenage boy into the arms, which is why it's so strange that so many young men and men generally gravitate more towards the Republican Party instead of the opposite. You'd think the Democratic Party would be like, hey, that's where we should be at. But there's a lot of things about the way men vote that don't really make sense to me. I am a man, and so I definitely belong to that demographic and everything. But I look at a lot of what they believe. In the last episode, we talked about white women, but I will freely concede that the majority of Trump's base is white men. The overwhelming majority of the people that argue with me about Trump are white men. And I get them on Alabama Liberal and the YouTube channel and Twitter, and it's always white men. You have to look at it and think, okay, but you're anti-socialism and you hate the redistribution of wealth, even though a lot of times you benefit from that. When these programs actually do come, the biggest Trump demographic is the white working class male or males without college degrees. And a lot of these programs that Democrats put forward, they disproportionately benefit from. They don't see it that way. They say, no, you're wrong. You're talking about welfare bums and moochers. And I'm like, you benefit if you get hurt on the job and you need disability. A lot of these people draw disability eventually, or if they can, they want to lower the Medicare age. That benefits blue collar men who their bodies are shot. You know, your knees are aching, your back's hurting, you've slipped a disc, you've hurt yourself on the job so many times. And so lowering the Medicare age to where you could take advantage of it at 60 or even better at 50, that would absolutely benefit you because you might be the ones that need a lot of those programs. And so those are some examples. There are other examples I've used before. Cash for clunkers, the GM bailout, where a lot of those workers are white. A lot of the Democratic policies towards labor unions, that disproportionately benefits white working class men, need those protections. And people are always like, oh, the right to work states, they're better for workers. I'm like, bullshit. That's just straight up horseshit. So economically, it really doesn't make a lot of sense for people that are men to vote Republican, but that's overwhelmingly who does. Then you get into the social issues. One of the biggest ones is abortion, and that just seems to really drive a certain contingent of the Republican Party crazy. I've never really understood that. With immigration, I can at least understand their arguments. And with guns, I support some of their arguments. Abortion, I don't really get, because the same men that are so against abortion, they listen to Joe Rogan and Bill Burr bitch and moan about alimony and child support payments. And the same men would be like, well, how come it's fair that I have been sued for alimony and that the woman gets more because she has kids and child support payments and these concepts that drive them crazy. And yet in the same breath, well, if I get a girl pregnant, she should be forced to have my kid. It really feels odd to me, and have admitted that I've always wanted the protections of, if you were to get someone pregnant that you didn't want to have a kid with, wouldn't you want the option and the freedom to be able to abort that child or not be strapped to a woman for 18 years that you happen to have sex with? It's kind of unfair if you think about it. If you have sex with a woman one time, an hour of pleasure could be 18 years of work in terms of raising a kid with somebody that you don't like and don't have anything in common with and are not together. And there's so many men that say, yeah, I've been divorced for 10 years. I don't even talk to my wife anymore, but I'm still paying alimony or I'm still paying child support for a kid that I never see. And she won't even let me see him. My custody's strange. You have to wonder, those same men that always feel that way would be so anti-abortion and want to limit that as much as they can. You'd think they would want those freedoms for themselves. And one topic I'd like to get to is destination abortions. As far as I know, I'm not going to say I coined that phrase, but I used it before. I had never seen it before. And I started using that years ago to describe the way that people say, oh, we should kick this down to the states. The states should be able to vote on this, and they should have different abortion laws per state. That's horseshit, because what you're going to have is states like Alabama and Mississippi and that regional inequality. That's another term that I coined. The regional inequality, state inequality, is really what states' rights is, because you'll have people like Kay Ivey and the Alabama legislature, and they'll set rules to where there are no abortion clinics in Alabama. So if girls need to have one, they're going to do destination abortions. They're going to go to California, or they're going to go to New York. And they said, oh yeah, but they want to pass a law to where it'll be illegal to go out of state and do an abortion. And I'm like, yeah, good luck enforcing that shit, first of all. And number two, how is the state's rights if you pass a law that says somebody can't go to a different state and have an abortion, and if they come back, they're going to be arrested? How is that state's rights? And that was the conflict that never made sense about segregation. Virginia versus Loving. They could go out of state and get married, but when they came back to Virginia, they would be arrested. And that's what they took all the way to the Supreme Court, and that's how they got that thrown out. You can't argue for state's rights if it's still enforceable in the state you come in. It's not like I can take my California marijuana and go to Alabama and say, say, hey, states' rights, I brought it from California, they're still going to arrest you because the rights are different in those states. So that doesn't really make sense, and that's not a good argument. But the same thing that I look at with segregation, and what people forget to mention with that, is that it was really a police state. The bigotry, that's right in your face. But you also have to think, a government that tells you where you can sit on a bus, where you can eat once you're inside the restaurant, meaning at what counter or what table, where you can go to the movies, where you can use the damn bathroom, where you can work, where you can live, where you can worship, any place that tells you all these things, that is a police state. That is big government at its worst. And so it's very odd that some of the same people that would now preach big government sucks and I'm free state and all this, they're really not. And they're really not on the right page. And I look at segregation as a very obvious police state in that they're telling people every aspect of your life is going to be micromanaged and I'm going to do that for you. I would argue that that's not good for white people either. It's not good for them to live in a system like that because I think it slowly strips away freedoms from everybody. You get in the mindset of, am I doing something right? Am I doing something wrong, you should be thinking, what do I want to do? What do I want my freedoms to be? And so I'm very against this idea. What I see is actual government intrusion. Republicans talk about government intrusion in terms of if I want to dump chemicals into the lake and poison everybody in the town, I should be able to do that. In my view, that's not government intrusion for the EPA to stop you from killing me. That's basically what the government should be doing. When they talk about government intrusion, a couple days ago, you saw where Melania is pressuring the Justice Department to take the profits away from her ex-best friend who wrote a book about her and tell-all book about her and released these recordings. They now want the Justice Department to pressure her into taking the profits and giving it to them. That is the government literally stepping in to take away private profits and give it to themselves. Trump, when Microsoft was thinking about buying TikTok, going to ban TikTok, and so they sold it. Oracle bought it instead, which, by the way, Larry Ellison, who's the owner of Oracle, is a big Trump backer. Gee, wonder if there's a connection there. But Microsoft was thinking about buying it, and he said, if Microsoft buys it, we should get a cut of the TikTok deal. Can you imagine if Obama had said, hey, the Treasury should get a cut? That is the government literally taking a percentage of a private business transaction. Trump famously, when AT&T wanted to buy Time Warner, the AT&T Time Warner merger, he wanted to block it because of CNN. He said, if you could spin off CNN, then I'll approve this merger. And that was really getting held up for a long time over just CNN and how much he hates it. Same thing for the Washington Post. He's talking about he hates Amazon solely because Jeff Bezos also owns the Washington Post. Amazon took Microsoft to court over a JEDI contract for cloud computing that the Pentagon put through. Microsoft got a $10 billion cloud computing contract with the Pentagon. Amazon's like, we think we should have got this, but Trump stepped in. And even at the week that was being decided, you could see him tweeting bad stuff about Amazon. So we do think he influenced it. Then there's the tariffs, the trade wars. 3,500 businesses sued the Trump administration, saying the tariffs were killing them. So I don't look at him as a small government conservative at all. They really haven't been for a long time. People say, oh, the Republican Party is small government. Bush built a police state, Homeland Security, and rendition, and torture, and Gitmo Bay, and Guantanamo Bay, and then having two separate wars, and fabricating evidence to get to go into the Iraq War. On what fucking planet is that small government? Reagan wasn't for that either. And so you can look back at it and say, this is a fraud. They preach small government, and then when Democrats actually get into office, if Obama so much as tries to build a wind pipeline from Oklahoma to Tennessee, completely innocuous green energy project, they sue him and talk about he doesn't have the right to do it. But if Trump wants to repeatedly threaten private business, well, somehow that's okay. But as I was saying about segregation is bad for white people as well in terms of it limits their freedoms. It limits who they can date, who they can take home, who they can have in their bathroom. Innocuous things become a big deal and the police have to show up and they can't settle things in their own way. I think of that as abortion. I think if you have states in the South banning it and blue states having it or a federal ban, which I don't think will happen, I think it'll go down to the states, you will have all these women in Alabama and Mississippi and places like that trapped, and they'll be forced to have kids that they do not want, which is the number one indicator of future poverty. Number one indicator of future poverty is if a woman has a kid she cannot afford. On top of that, Alabama and Mississippi have the highest teen pregnancy rates, the highest single mother rates, the highest accidental pregnancy rates, the highest out of wedlock pregnancy rates. It's going to make it even more lopsided and make our state even more poor to have this regional inequality seep in. 5% more women in Alabama who have a kid they can't afford, and then they have to return to WIC and welfare and food stamps, which conservatives also despise and don't want to do. And over in California, you'll have a girl who's like, hey, you know, I had sex with a guy when I was a senior in high school, but I don't owe him anything for the rest of my life. I'm not going to have a kid just because he wants me to. I'm going to go to the Los Angeles abortion clinics and Planned Parenthood and have an abortion. And that's my right. And that's how it should be. And that's my freedoms. It's my body and my choice, as people like to say. But I think of it as more freedom. It's your individual freedom. I can't think of anything more big government intrusive than forcing a woman to have a kid she does not want and carry that to term, regardless of her personal feelings or her wishes. And then we always have to have this Republican debate of, well, should there be exemptions for rape? Should there be exemptions for if it endangers her life? There should be exemptions for whatever the fuck people want and choose. It's their freedoms. And the fact that we're voting for people that are taking our freedoms away, we're supposed to be against this as Americans. As Americans, we love freedom. We love democracy. We love the right to pick our rulers. And so a staggering number of Republican voters don't seem concerned with all the inequalities I pointed out last week, where the Dakotas outvote California in the Senate, and a Wyoming voter has 37 times the voting power as somebody in California. The Republicans haven't won the popular vote but one time in the last 30 years, and yet they've been president about half that time. They don't really seem very concerned with these things, but I'm very concerned with it. And they should be too, because that could easily be flipped back on them. It's not good for them either, whether they realize that or not. What happens when factory comes in, they pollute the fuck out of that town, or a fracker poisons the groundswell, and they've shown houses in Texas where the fracking goes bad, and they turn on the faucet, and then you can light the faucet, and there's a flame coming out. And so you'll see $1 million house, and he'll say, I can't get $10,000 for this because we can't get water. There's no water for baths, plumbing. You have to build a fucking well outside and have a well and get your water out of there and boil everything that you use for yourself. You got to boil it, or you got to buy bottled water. You got to have it come around. And there are entire towns like this where water is either completely scarce or poisoned and they can't use it. And those towns are like, gee, if only the government had been there to help us, or if only they had been there to stop all this from going on, because their property's worthless. Nobody's going to buy a house where you can't take a bath, a shower, drink the water, fucking flush the toilet, where every ounce of water you have to bring into the house like it's the pioneer days. And so I look at these things that men are obsessed with in the Republican Party, and I think if they really got their way, if they really got what they wanted, I think they'd be shocked at how awful it is. When you ask some of these men and they talk about, on Quora, you can see them writing about abortion, this and that, and then you look at some of their other answers and they're ranting and raving about their tax dollars going to public schools. They don't even believe in government schools, and they don't believe in WIC, and they don't believe in food stamps, and they don't believe in programs that help single mothers. So you ask these men and say, well, do you think that your tax dollars should go to so-called government schools? No, I don't. My kids are grown. I don't use those systems anymore. And I'm like, but you're going to force people to have kids they don't want, and then carry them to term, and then put them in a school that you refuse to fund. I don't see what that has to do with anything. I don't see the connection. And I'm like, okay, but all these extra kids are going to be born. Who's going to take care of them? Are you going to take care of them? Well, no, I'm not going to. Have you ever been a foster parent before? Would you support your tax dollars going up $1,000 a year to pay for a well-funded foster care system? Hell no, I wouldn't support that. I don't want my taxes to go up 10 bucks. I'm for tax cuts. Where do tax cuts come from? When they give the money away to corporations and rich individuals, and they give middle-class people a fucking $15 tax cut, and they say, oh yeah, I got a tax cut, I'm so rich. Where does that money come from? It comes from the school systems, the WIC programs, the food stamps, all the social safety net that single mothers need because they didn't have an abortion and they had a kid they couldn't afford. And now Republicans, the same people that forced them to have it, are like, ugh, look at that welfare bum and mooch. Ugh, she's just sucking up the system. I can't believe my tax dollars go to her. So their issues make no sense. And then you say, well, there's always adoption. You can always give it up for adoption. There's more kids looking to be adopted than will ever be actually adopted. And then when you look at who actually needs to adopt kids, because we live in a time of artificial insemination and IVF, you can manipulate science to the extent that a lot of people would rather have their own kids. They're not adopting kids like they used to. Who does still need to adopt kids? Gay men, gay couples. Well, are you for Pete Buttigieg and his husband being able to adopt kids? Hell no. I don't want them being raised in some den of sin. That's pedophilia and all this shit. They really don't make any sense. Well, would you support abstinence-only sex education being got rid of? What does that have to do with anything? It's been proven that when people are given real sex education about condoms, about birth control, about what they can do, NuvaRing, Depo, IVF, educate young girls, especially in these red states where they don't hear a lot of this stuff, about birth control and what they can do with their bodies, it's been proven that lowers the abortion rate. But they're not for that either. And that's the key. If you really wanted to get rid of the number of abortions in America, you'd make birth control, you'd make it as easy as buying a pack of gum. You could buy anywhere you wanted to, totally free, without a prescription, practically giving it away. If you were a teenage girl, you wouldn't need to go to your parents to get them to approve it or buy it for you, and some red states do have stipulations like that. You'd be able to sell the Plan B pill to anybody you want to. They would make all these things publicly up, but they haven't done that. And so you have to wonder about, what's this really about? Is this just about some dirty old man like Trump who gets with some young girl, and if he fucks a teenager and she gets pregnant, he wants her to be forced to carry his old man sperm to full term and then have a kid? Is that what this is really about? I think it might be. And I'm going to go off on a slight side note here. I've always said that Melania Trump is as bad as Trump is. A lot of people cut her some slack and they say like, oh, Melania, I feel bad for her. She's like a prisoner. I don't believe that shit for a second. I really don't. I think that she is fully on board with whoever he is or what he does, and she releases a PSA trolling Hunter Biden after the first debate about drug addiction. She wears a jacket that says, I really don't care, do you? As she goes to meet really disenfranchised children that are suffering so badly, she wears a jacket that says that. Pretty clear message to me. There's a leaked phone call of her talking about, oh yeah, I'm doing all this Christmas bullshit. Who even gives a fuck about Christmas stuff, right? And she's ranting and raving and cursing just like Trump does. Starting a Be Best campaign about bullying, and then says, who's the most bullied person in America? She is. She's the most bullied person in America. So she's got that famous Trump self-pity and everything. I think the reason that he picked her, because he slept with countless prostitutes and countless strippers and countless porn stars and paid them money. And the reason that he would marry Melania and not some of the others, they have a lot in common. They're both jerks. They are simpatico in that way of personality. They're like, oh no, well, she's a young woman and he's a rich older man. And I'm like, yeah, but even among men, very rarely will people pick somebody they're completely not simpatico with. I don't know if you can build a life having almost nothing in common with somebody. And I think that Trump and Melania are basically the same person in that they feel sorry only for themselves. They're mildly sociopathic. They have a very strong lack of empathy. And they both seem to act like Barron Trump doesn't exist. They barely talk about him or mention him. And I bring up Barron because I've noticed this thing where I've never talked about him in any videos or podcast episodes or articles. You know, really, I'm not that interested or don't want to talk about him, but I've noticed that every time he gets brought up, Republicans are like, shut up, don't talk about him. And it's almost like, is he some kind of like in the attic child or something like that? Like, they got him chained up in the basement or whatever? Like, why is it so strange to even bring up his name and they go crazy? Bush had two daughters and Clinton had Chelsea and Barack had two daughters. When you look at the way past presidents have been with their kids, it wasn't a state secret to even mention them or take a photograph of them or bring them up. And before Trump took office, people talked about, well, he'll be the first president since JFK to have a young son in the White House. And so they seemed interested in that and intrigued by it, maybe a little excited by that, because it was, I guess, slightly unusual because so many presidents in a row have had daughters in the White House. But yet, the second he took office, it was almost like they put a black box around Barron and they don't bring him up and they don't talk about it. And he went away forever. And when you hear like stories about Trump's life in the White House, he eats dinner by himself. According to most people, he watches about 8 to 10 hours of cable news television a day. He has meetings where he just screams at people and berates them. Occasionally goes to Mar-a-Lago and golfing with his buddies or something. It doesn't seem like a man who has a young son, and that we don't hear about him like, oh, he took Barron to do this and him and Barron did that. We don't hear anything about them. Trump's life in the White House, you could almost see where he might forget that Melania and Barron exist, because it just seems so isolated. Dinners alone and watching cable news all day and not spending any time with them. And so it's a little odd, and you have to wonder what that's about. And some people speculate that Barron has autism. And you say that and conservatives go crazy, and I don't understand why they go crazy. I don't get why that is so taboo to even bring that up or talk about it. And it's almost like a stigma. And I think the Trumps have done this. I think their base feels this way, where if somebody has an affliction or something, any type of, I guess you might say, unusual condition, not necessarily even a handicap, but anything slightly unusual, they act like it's a big shame to bring that up. They're ashamed of it and they got to hide it and they got to go away. People have said that if Trump were willing to talk about Barron's autism and go out there, it might be a teachable moment for the United States. It might bring about somewhat humanistic tendencies in Trump, but he'd rather scream and raise hell and insult people. And he's so backwards that I could see it being like he's ashamed of it. And that's why he's hidden, barren away in the attic and acts like he doesn't exist. You look at Trump, he has a very strange thing about health where his ex-mentor, Roy Cohn, who he loved like a father figure, when he was dying of AIDS, Trump said he refused to see him. He would slowly back away. He kind of quit talking to him. Sickness and illness are not things Trump can deal with. They're things that he kind of backs away from, which is why he's pretending coronavirus is not happening. It's why he mocked that disabled reporter and didn't seem to think there was anything wrong with it. It's why people who were ailing, like John McCain and John Lewis, they got very little sympathy from Trump. He has a problem with illness in that he sees it as weakness and doesn't want to be around it. And if there were anything unusual about Barron or an affliction or a condition or something like that, I do think he would look at it that way instead of the truth, which is people can be different and they can live totally normal, happy, sometimes superior lives, and we could easily do that for him if I wasn't ashamed to even be photographed with the damn kid or talk about him. It's just a very odd family and dynamic. He would really not want to talk about autism because supposedly it's in the man's sperm, especially if the dad is too old. Trump was damn near 60 years old when Barron was born, so he's probably got that old man sperm, and they've actually said that this is a big... People used to think that the women were too old, it was the age of the eggs, but it's actually more the sperm and how old it is and how junk it is and the quality of it. That's a big part of where you get a lot of your genetic maladies. Of course, we don't talk about that because that would make men look bad, and that kind of brings us more into other points that I want to bring up. So there's something I call the pricktatorship. Now, the pricktatorship is the startling statistic that almost every dictator in the last century has been a man. Literally 99% of the dictators in the last century have been men. And you have to look at that and think, what's behind that? What is it about fascism? And there have been female tyrants before. Usually they're queens and they inherit it through a royal title. And that's why even when a queen is a tyrant, you have her advisors constantly like, you should get married. You should have a kid. They can't wait to push her out and bring in a husband or bring in a young son to do the same thing. Yes, there have been some female tyrants, but very few. And they're usually the daughter of somebody like Indira Gandhi or something. They're the daughter of somebody else who had that at one time. And they usually don't last very long. Indira Gandhi was assassinated, and there have been other Indian dictators who have not been, and you know, I'll let you draw your conclusions from there. People say things like, well, America is so backwards, they haven't had a female president. Yet you look at it and you're like, all the countries they point to, like Pakistan's female prime minister was assassinated, India's was assassinated. And so a lot of these cases they point to, I'm like, if they can't survive in office, I don't really see what the difference is. Even Canada, who likes to chastise us over and over again for not being liberal enough, they've only had one female prime minister, and she was never elected, and she only served a few months. So they've actually never had a real female prime minister in terms of somebody that was elected. Hillary Clinton, of course, was elected by the popular vote. It's just that this insane system that was put in kept her down, which that feels kind of like the ultimate representation of what people might refer to as the patriarchy, the system for men being set up where it's like, well, Hillary won by 3 million votes. Too bad she lost. There are only male dictators, basically, almost without exception, on the planet. And so what is it about men that lends themselves to fascism? And why can you look at all these fascist countries and not say like, well, why isn't there a Sarah Palin in charge of the Philippines or a Margaret Thatcher in charge of Russia or somebody? Because there are fascistic women. There are women who lean in that direction. There are women who would definitely be tyrants if they were allowed to be and come up the ranks and seize that power. Why don't they? I think it's because a lot of men will not follow them. And if a woman is ever democratically elected, then she'll be removed from office half the time, either by the assassinations I mentioned or like Brazil. Brazil had a female president that got recalled and impeached and was replaced by this guy, Bolsonaro, who they call is the Trump of the tropics, the new Brazilian president. He's another nationalistic idiot who's a sexist pig that came to power because he stepped over a woman to get there. Because the dictatorship is alive and well, that's why you see an entire, I'll say, demographic of people on social media. Trump's got to be reelected. Biden can't be. Biden is bad. Biden is bad. I'm like, what is so bad about Joe Biden? Barack Obama, 78-year-old centrist VP. The mere fact that if he dies, Kamala Harris will be president. And they kind of go right to that. They do a pivot immediately to what they're really worried about is Kamala Harris. And it's not even really Joe Biden. It's her. And I'm like, if that doesn't show you that there's something there in terms of the sexism. And I watched a miniseries called Comey Rule, on Showtime. I would recommend it, even though I don't like James Comey, even though I think it was still a little too soft on him in terms of just how stupid he was and how naive he was and what kind of a phony he is. Jeff Daniels is an actor who's got instant integrity. So just by him playing James Comey makes him more sympathetic than the real James Comey. But I would still recommend it because I think Brendan Gleeson is fantastic as Trump. There's two parts. The first episode, you don't really see Trump. And the second episode's kind of like after he takes office and it's all about him. But the first episode, they kind of do it like Jaws. You see the back of his head or maybe the outline of his body or a stray snippet here and there, and they're kind of building you up to see the monster at the end of the movie, the big monster movie reveal of the shark at the end, and really kind of set you up for the horror, and that's very effective. But in the first episode, there's so many times when Comey's investigating Hillary, and everywhere he goes, there'll be a doctor who's like, yeah, bring that bitch down a peg, or there'll be a receptionist who's like, yeah, I hope you get her. And there's a lot of men that would say things to Comey at restaurants or wherever he was at. It definitely showed you that there was something inside the FBI and inside the culture at the time that was like, we got to get Hillary. And that's why it's so funny that Trump hates the FBI now, because it used to be called Trumpland because so many FBI agents were for Trump. Comey was afraid he'd have an insurrection on his hands if he didn't try to help out Trump, because so many of them wanted to. And they thought Hillary was a criminal and her emails. If you see Hillary and you think, well, she hid some emails from us and that makes her a criminal, but you're ignoring the Trump Ponzi scheme, the charity fraud, the fact that he's a Russian asset, that eight separate people in his campaign had connections to Russia. What the FBI really does, which is white collar crime, which Trump has committed, and espionage, which Trump has committed, and traitors, and everything that they actually cover, he's done it. But they're obsessed with Hillary, and they have to go after her, and that's who they want to get. And that's sexism, clearly, because she was a woman, and they had a really hard time with the idea of a woman will be president, and we'll be taking orders from a woman. Does it matter that it's Hillary, who's extremely qualified, and some people say to the right of a lot of the male Democratic politicians on certain issues, some people say she's more hawkish, and she's more likely to drop a bomb, and it would almost be better for the military to have a leader who they think is more sympathetic to what they want than Trump. That was the rub from some of the liberals, like the Bernie people who don't like Hillary. It's the idea of having a female boss. A woman wears the pants and they talk down to me and I don't want to take orders from them. And it feels unnatural for a certain kind of guy to have a female boss. And that's what you see in so many ranks of the government. They say most of the military votes Republican. Most of the FBI was Republican. Most of the CIA was Republican. Not sure that's true anymore because Trump has worked so hard to alienate them. In fact, I floated a conspiracy theory that Trump was a stealth Democrat. I did that many years ago, and I'm like, you couldn't ask for a better Trojan horse if the Democrats had wanted to put him in the Republican Party to bring it down from the inside, because, I mean, my God, look at it. I do think the dictatorship is very real, this idea that a man has to be in charge. He has to be president. I'm not convinced, even as bad as Trump is doing in the polls and as crazy as he's been and as awful a year as he's had in 2020, I think Elizabeth Warren would have lost to Trump, and I think Kamala Harris would have been a coin toss at best. Whereas I think Biden, I believe he will win comfortably. I think a lot of people from Rupert Murdoch to Ben Sasse are predicting it's going to be a landslide. I think that they clearly have their own polling. Rupert Murdoch has one of the largest media empires on the planet. So, I mean, he clearly has his finger in the wind and kind of his whole business is dependent on who wins certain elections. So I think he can read the tea leaves. And so I think whereas Biden will win by a comfortable margin, Kamala would have really struggled. And I believe Elizabeth Warren still would have found a way to lose to Trump. There's just something about a woman boss or a woman in charge that men just really resist. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the next 20 years because women are becoming the wealthiest demographic in America. White women are going to have more wealth than white men as a general average. You see, there's more women in law school. There's more and more women going into the medical field. There's more and more women going into higher level degrees. When you look at a K-12 school, it's almost striking how different boys and girls are treated. A lot of times girls are over there building rocket ships and complex structures and cool things, and the boys are over there hitting each other with sticks, and the teachers and principals will be like, hey, girls, you can do anything you want to be. Girls are great at math. And then the boys are like, are we not good at math? Or they're looking around and it's like, the boys are just sitting there like the expectations are so low for them, like they have no real expectation for them. You already see the foundations being laid where men are going to be increasingly irrelevant to the economy. They're not going to make as much money as women are. And so how will that affect the next generation that has female bosses as as I have and has to work underneath women and things like that. I mean, will they even look at it as strange, or will they have a problem with it, or will they not be consciously aware of it, but then subconsciously resist it because they're sitting on YouTube 12 hours a day watching Ben Shapiro and Jordan Peterson talk about how women suck all the time? Ridiculous that YouTube has really become a haven. And I remember the last time I got a comment from a female user on YouTube. I mean, I almost get no comments from women in all the videos I've made, 200 videos and thousands of comments. I can't remember getting a comment from a woman. And that kind of is sad. And YouTube used to give you the demographics where there'd be like a pie chart and it would show you the gender of the people that are looking at your YouTube videos. And mine was like 95% men and only 5% women. That's how skewed it was. And I imagine that's probably even more true for people that directly talk about men and women's issues and kind of pander directly to men. And a lot of these guys do that. I had a video that said Jordan Peterson got big because men have no role models. So a lot of times you'll have someone very sneaky and kind of duplicitous like Peterson who presents themselves as a surrogate father figure to young men, many of whom come from divorced homes, or their dad might have skipped out, or they don't have a good relationship with their dad or what have you. Keep in mind that millennials are the most single generation in American history. A lot of millennials have not gotten married. They have not had kids of their own. A lot of them come from parents that got divorced, because you started to see the divorce rates skyrocket for baby boomers and Gen X. Now millennials are not getting married at all. So you're seeing men increasingly isolated and increasingly not really around women that much. That's especially true for people that are online all the time, and they're on Twitter and they're on YouTube, and they may not even have a lot of face-to-face interaction with women. And especially the kind of male Republican voters that might work in construction or meatpacking or industries where there just really are not a lot of women around. That's when you get to something I call gender drain. Gender drain is the fact that a lot of women leave rural areas and go more towards cities, and then you might have small towns where men outnumber women by a pretty good margin. In Alaska, it's no surprise that they've only went Democratic once for president. So since they've been a state, they've been Democratic one time, and that was LBJ's blowout against Barry Goldwater. And it's no surprise that a state that men would outnumber women would have never gone for a Democratic candidate. Other states have a comparable makeup, like Wyoming and Montana and Idaho and a lot of the western states. They have significantly more men than women. And these are Senate seats. The Senate seats from just Wyoming, Montana, and Alaska are the same as Illinois, New York, and California. We get the same representation in the Senate. And so then you can see why the Senate doesn't seem to think it's a big deal to confirm a justice that could overturn abortion, because they're in states where there's many male voters and they're like, yeah, we don't really care about abortion rights. Or the opposite of, we actively want a woman to be imprisoned to our sperm and have our kid because we live in Alaska and we're more likely to fuck a bear than a live woman. Gender drain is very real. I talked about, after I graduated from Auburn, it was the recession. There were no jobs around. I couldn't find anything. So I had to move back in with my parents. And I noticed that the town that they're in, it's kind of like a large retirement home with a high school in the middle. All the single women are either 18 or 60. There's women in their 40s and 50s that are getting a divorce and they're single, and there's women that are teenagers. But in terms of like, you're 22, 23, you're in your 20s and 30s and you're single and you want to date, there's about three times as many men as women. That's like mainland China. When you see mainland China and all the problems they have demographically and the sexism and things, that's the rural areas and that's the red states. And that's what I mean by regional inequality. That feeds into gender drain. Women might work in PR or marketing or fashion or media or beauty products, cosmetics, things like that, and they filter out to cities. They have to go to bigger cities like Nashville or Atlanta or Houston or even New York or Los Angeles if they want to go far enough, and they have to go there to get jobs and find things in their industries. If men work more in things that are not so much city dependent, like construction and meatpacking and manufacturing and things like that, military bases and towns around military bases and army installations, so they can stay in these small towns that are disproportionately male-driven, but they're looking around and there's almost no single women to date. And if you find a woman who's single, she's probably got two kids, because again, she was forced to have kids when she was really young. So it's like, well, I want to go on a date with Molly, but you know, she's got two kids. Should we go somewhere romantic? No, we'll just go to Chuck E. Cheese. Not a great environment to be a single man. where there's not a lot of options, very competitive. That gender drain is very bad. And that's made men, I think, in rural areas angrier and angrier. They always say things like, why are Trump voters so angry? I'm like, because they're men who can't get laid. That's what it really boils down to. They can't get laid, and that's why they're so fucking mad. And when you can't get laid, and the only people you're hanging around are militia group members or your NRA club or the gun range folks that sit around, and there's five guys and they all shoot guns and talk about, oh yeah, cancel culture this and PC liberals that, and this is bullshit, and can you believe the feminazis behind me too? They can't fucking get laid, and that's why they're sitting there driving themselves crazy about this crap. And then they go online and they're just like, I can't believe feminazi bullshit and all this, and that's why they hate Hillary Clinton and all these groups. They see lifestyles in New York and Los Angeles, and they can't live them, can't really find anybody today. And that's why, in a weird way, they idolize Trump, because he's a playboy and a sex addict, and because he does all these things that they wish they could do. They wish they could walk by a 10-year-old girl and be like, hey, I'll be married to her in a few years, or maybe I'll be dating my daughter, or maybe I'll have my lawyer go pay a porn star some hush money, and then he'll go to jail and I'll get away with it scot-free. They wish they could sort of live that. It's a little bit like when people would watch The Sopranos or Breaking Bad, and Vic Mackey from The Shield or Tony Soprano or Walter White. I wish I could go to the gas station and that dickhead who's such a jerk, I wish I could blow up his car like Walter White did. Everybody has frustrations in their life. People that are assholes, your neighbor smokes by your windows and never apologizes for it, or somebody cuts you off in traffic, or there's somebody that you just can't stand that is in your neighborhood or your job or whatever. We all have those frustrations that we feel powerless, that make us feel powerless. And these anti-heroes we watched on TV, they make us feel great because we wish we could do what they do. Like, oh, I wish I could just get a fucking brick and hit that guy in the head with it or take a baseball bat. And they're living out this vicarious fantasies for us. I think Trump is kind of like that, and that he lives out a vicarious fantasy that these guys wish they could, but they don't think about the opposite side of that, which is he inherited $400 million from his father. You didn't. And that's the difference. He inherited $400 million. He's the luckiest son of a bitch on the face of the earth. He's had deals with NBC. He's become the president, and he'll never be like you. You'll never be like him. He's able to fall ass backwards into success. He's able to fail upwards. When you weren't born rich, you weren't able to do that. Anything you're going to get is because you've worked for it, you've been smart, and you've saved, and you've put away money, and you've earned it. And he can't say that. But they look at him as like, oh yeah, he's like a role model kind of. And that's what I meant in that video about men have no role models. And they look up to the wrong people. They look up to the Joe Rogans and the Jordan Petersons and that. In a very weird way, millennial men are kind of in a strange place in terms of masculinity. Because we were sort of the first generation brought up mostly by women. And Fight Club made that point. This is a generation of men brought up by women. So what does that make them? Or how does that show them how to act? They were kind of de-emphasized to the extent of, as a white male millennial, I was very cognizant of the fact that, especially within liberal circles, they said the universe does not revolve around you. The universe doesn't revolve around you. You're not the most important person on the planet. Women are important. Black people are important. Gay people are important. It's not all about you. And I don't think necessarily, and I'm not trying to be overly stereotypical, because there's a lot of great men in their 70s. Joe Biden is one of them. We have a candidate that's a great guy in his 70s who's very empathetic. But I think a lot of men of Trump's generation, they weren't quite brought up that way. And they were brought up a certain way. And then the culture started to shift and it started to change. And it started to really kind of shift away from them. And that's what they can't stand. And that's what they hate so badly. Now, in the town that my parents live in, there's a group of men that sit around the McDonald's in the morning and they drink cups of coffee at 6:30 in the morning at McDonald's and hold court. And they don't like that when they did that as kids, everybody would come up and be like, oh, let's see what Pop's got to say. Let's see what they're talking about. Let's see what they're discussing. And now all the younger people look at them like, who are these old farts sitting in the corner? I wish they'd go away, or I wish they'd go somewhere else. They don't like that it shifted away from them. And you kind of can't blame people for that. You can't blame people for not wanting to become less powerful and less privileged. People say, you got to check your privilege. Well, why should you? The whole point about privilege is that it benefits you. Why should you give that up? Why should you give up things that are good for you and benefit you and in your self-interest? Kind of fallacy to expect people to voluntarily give that up. You're right. I'm not as important as I thought I am. We should listen to everybody but me, and I should never open my mouth again. People are not programmed to think that way, and you can't blame people for not wanting that to happen. And so when a lot of these older white men that I see arguing with me about Trump and being for him, and that I'm not picking on them and that demographic, because I know a lot of older white men that don't like Trump, but that is the majority of his base. That is the demographic that he wins handily, is white men over 40. He wins them very handily, and if that was all that could vote on this election, he would be reelected. That was true for Romney, where he won 48 states if only white men could vote in 2012. I love to look at the presidential election pages on Wikipedia, and each one has a section called voter demographics. And you click on voter demographics, and you scroll down and you see like who's voted in each election. Very clearly, you see patterns. And this goes all the way back to the 80s, but from the 80s onward, Democrats almost always win a majority of women, general women voters, not just white women voters, but like all women put together. In fact, Hillary did worse with white women than just about any other Democratic candidate has, which is why I referred to the matriarchy in the last episode. But you see that they do better with women. Men overwhelmingly vote Republican, especially men over a certain age, almost always vote Republican. That's the most consistent voting demographic. Then you scroll down and you look at religion. And religion is something they started measuring. I believe 2004 is the first time I saw it. It said people who were non-religious or Jewish or go to church only a few times a year, Democratic voters. And then the ones that went once a week or more or once a month, Republican voters. And that was true for John Kerry and Bush. That was true for Obama, both elections. That was true for Hillary and Trump. Probably be true in this race as well. So there's something about the very religious, meaning people that would go to church once a week or more, that Republicans win handily. And there's something about that. And I've pointed out many times that Trump makes no sense as somebody the evangelical base could support. I'll go through the greatest hits one last time. He's a sex addict. He's been married three times. He's had kids with three different women. Melania is rumored to be a prostitute when he met her. Picture out of a catalog by his own admission. There's pictures of her naked all over the internet. He's paid hush money to porn stars. He cheated on her with Playboy bunnies. He's cheated on every wife he's ever had. He talked about grabbing by the pussy. He talked about dating his own daughter. He talked about marrying a 10-year-old. Was a peeping Tom at the Miss Universe pageant. He's got literally dozens of cases of sexual harassment. Is even being sued for rape at this moment. So you could look at him and think this is not an obvious candidate for the evangelical base, especially since he could not name his favorite passage of the Bible and actually couldn't name a passage of the Bible, period. Doesn't seem to know much about it, and in private, allegedly makes fun of how religious Mike Pence is or thinks Christians are weirdos. Just doesn't seem to really have a lot in common with him, so it's very odd that they like him, and I think it boils down to control. Religion is really about controlling people. It's really about telling people, here's what you should do on a daily basis. Do this, not that. Some of the things in religion, don't eat shellfish, don't eat pork. This is very clearly meant to be a different time period. If you eat shellfish centuries ago, it could kill you because they didn't realize about shellfish allergies at that time period. Pork was constantly being undercooked. That could kill you. So the fact that you still have Jewish people being like, oh, I can't eat that. That's pork. It's really a little silly. And there's so many things like that that were meant for a time period and now are still being used. And they're just being used to control people. That's all it really is about. So the fact that Trump, who is an aspiring tyrant, he's a fascist, he wants to control as many people as he can get his hands on. I think that's why they really support him. And of course, trying to cram in as much stuff as I possibly can this episode, I also want to talk about pretty privilege, which is where people will treat you differently if you are good looking. And that is one of the few things that I think really benefits women over men. There's a certain way people act towards you. I've seen women go to stores. If they're short a dollar or two, a guy's like, oh, here you go. And they'll pay their grocery tab, or they'll buy that lottery ticket, or they'll give them that pack of Skittles, or the cashier will just say, take it, or whatever. That's never happened to a man in my fucking life, right? Like, a man could never expect that to happen for them. And they could say, well, that's just the way that men and women are treated differently. Not women that guys don't want to be with. There's a very specific way that pretty privilege can benefit somebody. And I mean, I know beauty is in the eye of the beholder, so I'm not talking about beauty standards necessarily. I think there's a lot of different ways a woman can be beautiful. Guys will just, it doesn't matter. Like, it could literally be Naomi Campbell and they'll do it. It could be Gisele Bündchen and they'll do it. It could be Ashley Graham and they'll do it. Guys just like pretty women. They just like being around them. Most popular YouTube videos I put up is called Pretty Privilege. I know that sexual harassment is really bad, but Me Too has drifted from that. They've had mission creep. Now they drift to like, if a guy asks me out and there's no power imbalance and we don't work together, but if he asked me out, period, and I'm not interested, then that's gross and he shouldn't have even asked me out. He shouldn't have even made an attempt, even if it's not creepy. Because there's a creepy way, like, hey, you want a bone? But I mean, even if he's like, you know, you seem nice, let's get some dinner or something. The mere fact that someone ugly found them attractive creeps them out and makes them uncomfortable. And I have to think, well, would you rather be the woman who gets hit on by all these gross guys? Because women are always like, oh yeah, on these dating sites, there's 100 guys and they're always trying to ask me out and be with me. So gross. I'm like, would you rather be the woman who gets a lot of male attention? Or would you rather be the guy that nobody wants to sleep with? Like, would you rather have 100 people trying to have sex with you? Or would you rather have nobody somebody trying to have sex with you and you've got to desperately throw yourself at somebody else. I don't really feel sorry for people like this. This is a little bit like the billionaire being like, oh God, the taxes are so bad. They're only bad because you have so much money to start with. You have more money than anybody else on the planet. It's really not that bad to have an embarrassment of riches and choices. It's all about how you look at it. Then I want to talk one last thing about MSNBC versus Fox News. And what that means is I've noticed that MSNBC has a more female demographic skewing. Fox News, it's almost like softcore porn sometimes. Like I remember there was that thing where Trish Regan, she got let go from Fox earlier in the year. But when I was watching the clips, her hair was teased up. She had the biggest damn hair I've ever seen. She had on all this makeup. Camera had a soft focus, like somebody smeared Vaseline over the lens. It was very like a wind machine might have been in the background. She like she just came out of an 80s music video. And when you really watch Fox News, so many of the anchors are really attractive women. And the men are quite ugly, if you really look at it that way. Like Sean Hannity's no movie star, but Tucker Carlson's nobody's idea of good looking. Before that, it was Bill O'Reilly and all these guys that were ousted for sexual harassment. No surprise, can't find anybody to sleep with them unless they literally bully them into it career-wise. And yet all these women, it'll be like, well, that was Roger Ailes' design. He wanted to get very attractive anchor women and dress them a certain way, and that would appeal to a certain demographic. The average Fox News viewer is a man over the age of 60. And for men over the age of 60, especially in rural areas, this might be the only time they see good-looking women, especially a younger one. And so when you see all the Fox News blondes and Harris Faulkner and all the, and that's just your Fox News viewer. They sort of hypnotize men into watching that network. Because I started watching some Fox News just to know what Republicans are saying. And you'll turn over to MSNBC and there's some dork like Chris Hayes or Lawrence O'Donnell barely blinking for 5 minutes straight where he's looking into the camera like a lizard or something. And I like these people. I'm not trying to put them down. Female skewing and the stories they cover and their focus. And that's great. Maddow is probably one of the most talented pundits on television, period. She's very good at what she does. And I'm not surprised that Savannah Guthrie, who comes from the NBC News background, is the first person to really kind of get tough on Trump and really kind of pepper him with questions in the way that he's not used to. And then you turn over to Fox News and it's just the anchor women hypnotizing you. And I think a lot of men, they're drawn into that just from the visual image of it. And that's the pretty privilege I'm talking about. They're drawn into it for that reason. And then they're not even really processing the fact that like they're being asked to hate immigrants or be afraid of Antifa or Joe Biden or AOC is going to, even the AOC, their obsession with her, I think is kind of centered around the fact that they have a crush on her a little bit. You really don't see AOC that much on some of the liberal shows and networks. She's never really been on Real Time and she's always kind of not really as big of a footnote in the Democratic Party as she is in the Republican Party. She's a bigger deal because they like to focus on her. And I think that's partly because some kind of weird Latina, she's a communist revolutionary, viva la Cuba or whatever, but I want to fuck her deep down and stuff. And so again, it comes back to that idea of you are kind of what you hate. They're obsessed with AOC because she kind of turns them on and maybe a lot of what she's saying would actually benefit them, but they don't want to admit that and they got to blow it up and destroy it and then go to Trump and be like, Trump 2020, even though they kind of like Kamala Harris and they kind of have a crush on AOC and they might like a lot of the Democratic women. They might prefer maybe a Rachel Maddow type to a Megyn Kelly type, but they can't admit that. So they got to blow it up. They got to destroy it. Okay, everybody. Thanks for listening. Hopefully you're able to follow a jam-packed episode full of stuff and stay tuned for episode 78, which will be coming up shortly.